You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Here's a fun fact about the ITMFA account on Instagram. You know, we have one, right? And you're all following ITMFA Graham on Instagram, aren't you? Well, if you're not, please do. We tag the White House as the location for every photo we post at ITMFA Graham on Instagram, or repost those photos, since the whole account is pics that other people posted to their own Instagram accounts wearing their ITMFA t-shirts, hats, buttons, lapel pins, drinking out of their ITMFA mugs. And we put them all on ITMFA Graham. We regram them at our account, and we tag the White House so that anybody who searches the White House on Instagram gets hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, thousands now, of pictures of people wearing their ITMFA t-shirts. And maybe they'll think, what's ITMFA? And then they'll Google it and they'll know, and their heads will explode if they are supporters of Donald Trump. And if they're not supporters of Donald Trump, maybe they'll go get some ITMFA merch of their own. But Scott Zumwalt, S. Zumwalt on Instagram, may have taken the ultimate ITMFA pic last week. He posted a pic wearing his black and very comfy ITMFA t-shirt in the actual motherfucking White House and posted it to his Instagram account. Go look it up. We also reposted it at ITMFA Graham on Instagram. ITMFA in the house, in the White House. So thank you, Scott. And now a little more news about ITMFA. Impeach the motherfucker already. Earlier this year in April, we donated $100,000 split between three great organizations that we're supporting here at the Lovecast: the American Civil Liberties Union, Planned Parenthood, and the International Refugee Assistance Project. And I am pleased to announce that we are making our second $100,000 donation this week. Checks for $33,333.33 are going to Planned Parenthood and the ACLU, and a check for $33,333.34 is going to the International Refugee Assistance Project. ITMFA again stands for Impeach the Motherfucker Already, and we announced the ITMFA campaign here on the Lovecast first. So a big thank you to all of our listeners who bought t-shirts and buttons, spread the word on social media, and have helped us raise now $200,000 for these three great organizations, orgs that are fighting the Trump agenda. Just this week, Trump announced that he is making it harder for women to access birth control, rolling back Obamacare regulations about making birth control accessible to women through their healthcare programs, allowing employers to deny women access to birth control. Because really, you want your employer making those decisions for you about your reproductive health. And fuck Donald Trump. And we are really happy, in the wake of this bullshit, that we are making another donation, a big one, to all three of these orgs fighting Trump's odious anti-everybody agenda. We want to donate another $100,000 to these organizations before the end of the year, and you can help us get there by sharing ITMFA.org or ImpeachTheMotherfuckerAlready.com with your friends on your social media accounts. You can also help by ordering buttons, t-shirt, lapel pin, mug at ITMFA.org or ImpeachTheMotherfuckerAlready.com. We now also have tank tops. One last note, for the next 7 days, all ITMFA proceeds are going to go to the Hispanic Federation's account, their campaign to help people of Puerto Rico recover and rebuild from the destruction of Hurricane Maria and the misadministration of the Trump motherfuckers. So next 7 days, if you've been thinking about buying some ITMFA gear, right now buy that gear, and we'll make a donation to the Hispanic Federation for Puerto Rico relief. After those 7 days are up, we're going to go back to raising money for these three great orgs that we've been supporting for years and now supporting with ITMFA, Planned Parenthood, International Refugee Assistance Project, and the ACLU. Once again, go to ITMFA.org or ImpeachTheMotherfuckerAlready.com to get the gear, and be sure to post pictures to your own Instagram account of you wearing your ITMFA t-shirt or tank or button, drinking out of your mug, wearing your ITMFA hat, and we will reshare it at ITMFA Graham. And finally, a big thank you to Brian and Jesse and Scott and Ross and everybody else who's been helping out with ITMFA. They're the reason why it's been such a success, and we've been able to make these two large donations to these three great orgs. All right, coming up on today's Savage Lovecast, lots of your Q, a lot of my A. On the Micro and Magnum editions of Savage Lovecast, director Angela Robinson is here to talk about her new film, Professor Marston and the Wonder Women, her new biopic about the man and the women behind Wonder Woman. And on the Magnum, Mistress Matisse joins us to talk about a sad case where someone appears to be doing sex work under duress. All of that coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Casper, the online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Save $50 toward a mattress purchase by going to casper.com/savagelove and entering the promo code SAVAGELOVE. This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by Zeal, the best way to find top local licensed and pre-screened massage therapists to come to your home anytime. Go to zeal.com and get $25 off your first massage by using the promo code SAVAGE at checkout. This episode is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Check out this week's menu and get $30 off your first meal with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a married straight woman from the Midwest and a huge fan of your show. I have a question about curiosity versus inappropriate behavior. So my husband's ex has recently been getting in touch with her bi-curious side, and we couldn't be happier for her. However, it now appears that she may be verging on the realm of inappropriate underage infatuation. Let it be noted that she has a family history of mental disorders from both sides, and even has one family member serving time in prison for soliciting minors and possessing child pornography. What I have found is that she has been following social media accounts that include photos of young women and underage teen girls kissing and making out. Some of these photos include nudity, but nothing so graphic that one would get kicked off of the typical social media site. I must also include that this ex is the mother of my two stepchildren, the oldest of which is 16 years old and a girl. I'm torn because I'm certain that if my husband were following these accounts of girls making out who were his daughter's age and younger, that he would be basically considered a creepy perv and would be crossing a line. But the fact that this ex is a woman looking at these things seems to have less of a social shock. But I find it just as disturbing. Am I making something out of nothing, or has she indeed crossed a line? If the line has been crossed, what action should be taken?
Your husband's ex-wife is not in possession of child pornography, so far as you know. You are taking legal, legit online social media posts of a sexual nature and rounding those up to kiddie porn because you know her to be following, I suppose, on Instagram, a lot of young people, even perhaps some young women or late stage girls who are posting flash and kissing and rolling around to attract attention to themselves. I'm curious why your investigator Clouseauing your husband's ex-wife's Instagram account and figuring out who she's following and why. Yeah, it's a little squicky. It's squicky that she is following people who are young enough to be her daughters. Donald Trump is married to a woman who is young enough to be his daughter. There are plenty of people out there who are less odious than Donald Trump who are in relationships with people who are young enough to be their children. It doesn't follow, except in perhaps Donald Trump's case, that someone who's dating someone young enough to be their kid would want to fuck their kids. The incest taboo prevents people who are generally attracted to a certain type or a certain age range from being attracted to their kids if their kids happen to fall into that general type age range. So I just don't think that that's a fair leap you're taking there. Because she's attracted to young women and because her daughters are young women, she is going to fuck her daughters. I don't think that's fair. You could, if you wanted to, let her know that when she likes or follows someone on Instagram, that's something other people can see her doing. And it's not hard to see what someone is doing. You can go to someone's Instagram account and see who they follow and see who they like. And she may not be aware of that. She may be inept at this social media thing and may not know that she's outing herself to other nosy adults in the periphery of her life for the creeper that she is. But I don't think creeping on young, attractive people at this distance, at this remove, appreciating their photographs, appreciating their youth and vitality. I don't think that you can leap from there to she's going to fuck her daughters or she's going to rape an underage child or she's in possession of child pornography. And I don't think it's necessarily relevant that there's a history of mental illness in her family mental illness hasn't been shown to be a causation of child rape, and that there's a relative, however distant it was, I don't remember, who got in trouble for inappropriate or illegal activities online, it doesn't follow necessarily that she is any likelier to possess child pornography or solicit a minor. But you could give her a heads up, but then you're going to be outing yourself as the ex-husband's new wife who's policing the ex-wife's social media accounts for signs of inappropriate behavior. If you have a friendly relationship with her and you want a friend to friend, let her know that she's being a little inept on social media and other people can see what she's liking and that's going to creep other people out. You can give her that heads up, but you risk making yourself look like a creep too.
Hi, Dan. Quick question. You say that oral sex should come standard on all models and refraining from oral sex is perfectly good grounds to DTMFA. What about kissing? Not just a quick peck, not just very brief kissing, but sustained long kissing and making out. Should this be a deal breaker for your partner in a long-term relationship, particularly if it has been there before and then goes away?
I sometimes get in trouble for my comments about oral sex, which where oral sex comes standard, any model that arrives without it should be returned immediately to the lot, which I said to a guy who wrote me in Savage Love about his girlfriend who wasn't into oral. And that gets passed around on Tumblr a little bit. I also, in the very same column, very next letter, said the same thing to a woman whose boyfriend didn't want to perform oral. I do think oral should come standard. We have a reasonable expectation these days that oral comes standard. And in my opinion, any model, or in my life, any model that arrived without oral would be returned immediately to the lot. But that was just a glib little joke. There are people out there who don't like, don't enjoy oral sex. They should partner with each other. Or if you're with somebody who doesn't like oral sex, that becomes the price of admission that you have to ask yourself whether you're willing to pay to be with them. A life with this person who I love in all these other ways, where the sex is great in all these other ways, but they're just not into oral because perhaps they, A, just don't fucking like it. B, maybe they had some trauma related to oral and they just can't do it. Whatever it is that a price of admission you're willing to pay? If it is, Yahtzee, we have a wonderful relationship. Have a wonderful oral sex-free life with this person. All that said, kissing, does kissing come standard? Generally, I think, yes, kissing comes standard. A certain kind of making out comes standard. Early in a relationship, though, you will notice, if you're in a lot of long-term relationships, that that desire to just inhale someone, to drink all of their spit in a single evening, that wanes in time, and the kissing becomes a little bit more perfunctory, or the intervals between those kinds of make-out sessions with your long-term partner become longer. That's normal. For that insane, insatiable hunger for that other person's tongue and spit and sinuses, that wanes, that passes. Its absence bothers you, or its infrequency, or total absence, bothers you. So that would appear to be a price of admission you are unwilling to pay to be in this relationship. You want, or your partner wants, that kind of sustained makeout, tongue wrestling, spit drinking, intense kissing shit. And so that's the conversation that you need to have. And maybe there's something going on that your partner is embarrassed or ashamed to bring up. Maybe they have an oral health issue that they're embarrassed about and they worry that you don't like the taste of their spit anymore, that objectively their spit doesn't taste that great anymore. Maybe you have an oral hygiene or health issue that they're afraid to bring up. You want to stick your tongue in their mouth. And 10 years ago when you met, your tongue tasted delicious. Now, because you're an infrequent flosser or toothbrusher or you have gum disease that you haven't treated, or you haven't been a dentist in 10 years, now they're less interested in that. And you can figure out what the fuck the problem is if you press the issue. What is it going to take for us to get back to this? And you may find out when you press that issue that there's some other reason they don't want your tongue in their mouth and they are no longer as interested as they once were in drinking gallons and gallons of your saliva in a single sitting or laying down or rolling around. Good luck. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Casper, the online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing those savings directly on to you. Casper's mattress is an obsessively engineered mattress at a very fair price. It's made of supportive memory foam for a sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. Plus, its breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature through the night, and Casper mattresses are made in the USA. Terry and I, me and my husband, we sleep on a Casper mattress every night, and we just ordered a second one for our guest room, so we are genuine fans. Casper mattresses come delivered to your door in a compact box, and it's kind of magical to open it. It's like a genie mattress unfolding. You can buy it easily online and completely risk-free. Casper offers free delivery in the U.S., Canada, and now in the U.K., and painless returns within a 100-day period, so you don't have to lie down in a showroom. You can save an additional $50 toward a mattress purchase by going to casper.com/savagelove and entering the promo code savagelove. That's casper.com/savagelove and promo code savagelove. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, Dan. I'm calling you from Sydney. And the question is, I've been with my partner for 3 months now, and we haven't had anal sex, not even once, and just normal sex in general, we rarely have it, and he's usually tired or just not in the mood. So I really like the guy, and I just don't know if it's something that is a bad sign or not, because every single time that one of my friends asks me, how's it going, how's the sex life, how's that, and when I tell them, they give me judgy eyes and like that it's not normal. But I just don't know. Like, I can wait. That's not a problem for me. I just want to know if it's a normal thing or not. So what do you think?
Is it normal? Well, not for you. I don't think it's normal. Obviously, you wouldn't be asking this question if this was the way you typically rolled at the beginning of a new relationship. Like most people, you probably at the start of a new romantic sexual relationship are going at it all the time. There's something about this guy, though, that's different. This guy isn't into anal, it would seem, and he's not that into sex. And the person you need to be asking questions of isn't me and your friends. The person you need to really drill down on this with is your new boyfriend of 3 months' time. And you can say to him, look, I will wait. I'm happy to wait. If it takes you time to warm up to someone sexually and for the anal and the passion to come, obviously I'm willing to hang out because 3 months in with no anal and very little sex, here I am. But this isn't the kind of relationship that I can stay in indefinitely, unless it is. There are plenty of people out there in companionate relationships where the primary relationship is about affection and intimacy and a strong connection, a real bond, but not much sex or any sex at all. And those people either seek sex outside the relationship or they're not interested in sex mutually. But you are interested in sex. You wouldn't be asking this question if you weren't interested in anal and everything else. And so you're not cut out for that kind of relationship where there's a commitment and it's monogamous, but monogamy in that relationship means that these people don't have sex with each other or anyone else. And you need to know now, before you make an even larger emotional commitment or investment in him, what he is, where he is, what his expectations are, what his desires are, how sex functions for him in the context of a long-term relationship. And if you're not on the same page, be friends. Don't be boyfriends. But you're clearly worried, and you're asking me, should you be worried? Is this worrisome? Well, I think it's worrisome. I would, if I were in this relationship, probably be out of this relationship already. I would be very concerned, very worried. But if I really liked this person, and you seem to really like this person, I wouldn't just walk away at this stage. You're already 3 months in. You've already made some sort of emotional investment in him, some sort of romantic investment in him. It's worth risking the convo. And you're afraid of having the convo because you think that convo might lead to a breakup. That if you ask him what's up and he tells you that he's asexual or gray sexual or just not that sexual, and that, you know, his ideal relationship or all of his relationships have been intimate or romantic, committed, but not sexual, you're afraid that that's going to mean it ends. But if that's the truth and that's not acceptable to you, that kind of relationship wouldn't make you happy. You need it to end. You want it to end. So this is a case of you fearing having the conversation with him because it might lead to the end of the relationship, depending on the answer you get from him. But if that's the answer you get from him, you need this relationship to end. So you shouldn't fear having that conversation. You should be rushing to have that conversation now at this stage, because you need to get out if indeed that's the answer you get. I'm asexual. I'm gray sexual. I'm interested in intimacy, but I'm not interested in sex. Perhaps you could ask yourself or discuss with him whether that means a relationship where you two are partners and you seek sex outside it, and whether that would be all right with him. And you have to ask yourself whether that's what you want, that would be all right with you. And if it's not what he wants and it wouldn't be acceptable to you, you need to pull the plug. Let's say you want a good massage, but you do not have all the time you need to go and get one with the commute. You can have that massage therapist come to you with zeal. You pick the time and the location. Have your next massage on demand at home. Save time. Just go to zeal.com or on Zeal's iPhone or Android app. That's Zeal, spelled Z-E-E-L.com, and select from top local licensed and pre-screened massage therapists. Choose your favorite technique, gender preference, time, and location for your massage. 7 days a week, 365 days a year, a Zeal massage therapist can be at your door in as little as an hour. Privacy, convenience, quality, and comfort, that's what you get with your massage on demand with Zeal. Jump on Zeal.com and Zeal will send you one of their 9,000 licensed massage therapists with a massage table, music, and everything you need to turn your living room into a spa and give you a 5-star massage. Scheduling, booking, and payment is fast and easy. Even the tip is included. No money changes hands. Don't wait all week for a massage appointment at a spa when Zeal can come to you right away when you need it. Bring the spa to you and try Zeal today. Really, today. They're on demand. You can have the best massage of your life in your own home with Zeal today. And to get you started, our listeners get $25 off their first massage by using the promo code SAVAGE at checkout. And guess what? There's more. Sign up for Zeal's massage membership and get 20% off all your massages, plus a free massage table and sheet set. That's a $380 value, yours free. There's no initiation fee to join the membership, just a great additional savings on top of the $25 discount you're going to get when you use our promo code SAVAGE. So go to Zeal, spelled Z-E-E-L.com, or Zeal's iPhone or Android app, and then make sure to click add promo code at checkout to use our promo code SAVAGE and get $25 off your first in-home, on-demand massage.
Hi, Dan. Me and my boyfriend have been together for about 6 years. And recently, within the past year, we've had a lot of problems in our sex life. We've tried some very kinky stuff. We've definitely been, exploring lots of different things. But at the end of the day, I just need more foreplay, and I need to be kissed, and I need making out. I need to feel wanted, and I can't do the kinky things if I'm not turned on. When I try talking to him about this, he says, "Well, you know, it wasn't like that in the beginning." Well, you know, I'm not 23 years old anymore. I need more attention. This isn't a brand new relationship. And I can't help it that I'm not turned on. I want to have sex. I want to enjoy it. I want to come. But he just doesn't seem to get that. And I feel like me talking to him makes him feel like there's some pressure there. I feel bad for wanting more attention. When I say that I just want to make out, he tells me that maybe I should be with women. It sounds like I want female sex because I want it to be more romantical. That's not the case at all. I just want to feel wanted. Is this wrong?
He wants to go from zero to kinky 60 in 2.5 seconds, and that doesn't work for you. You say you feel bad for making him feel like there's some pressure there. You shouldn't feel bad for making him feel like there's some pressure there. You should be pressuring him. There's something that he wants. There's a kind of sex that he enjoys and you enjoy when you're ramped up for it. And there's something you need. And he's not giving you what you need to get you to this place where you both want to be, where he wants you to be. And yeah, he should feel the pressure. He should feel the pressure of the impending collapse of his romantic and sexual relationship, the loss of an indulgent GGG partner who's willing and happy and up for and as interested in his kinks as he is, because he's not willing to hold you, kiss you, give you the attention you need to kick your desires into high gear. Yeah, fuck that guy. You should be putting him on notice that if things continue as they are now, you're going to have to leave him. You're going to have to leave him for someone who will give you more foreplay. And maybe you needed less foreplay when you were 22 or 23 years old. Bodies, desires, dynamics evolve and change over time. And if he wants to be in a long, long-ass term relationship with you, he's going to have to roll with that. Your erotic script in the course of a long, long, long-ass term relationship, and I speak from experience, it will change in time. There will be ebb, there will be flow, there will also be revisions. There will also be new needs that present themselves that you have to be up for meeting, because we aren't static sexually. Our erotic inner lives shift and morph and evolve, and we transform. What's that thing? And I don't even know if it's true that every 7 years, every cell in your body has replaced itself and is brand new, your whole brand new human being, basically. I think that happens with us sexually too. I think that we shift and change. And I don't think as radically as every cell is a new cell and your sexuality is completely different, but your appetites change. The shit you ate for dinner when you were 22 years old, you're hopefully not still eating all of that same shit for dinner when you're 30. Hopefully it's not all ramen and stovetop stuffing when you're 30. Your palate has become more refined and hopefully a little bit more expansive. The same thing applies to sex. I guess I'm mixing metaphors all over the place, dinner and cellular regeneration, but it's true. And he has to be down for the journey with you. And if he's not down for the journey with you, if he's not up for evolving and shifting and changing and continue to explore new territory, and how is foreplay new territory? That should have, like other things we've talked about on today's show, come fucking standard. And you just weren't doing it back in the day for whatever reason, just because you were probably always ramped and juiced. Now you need it. Now he's got to put in a little effort to get you ramped up and juiced. And if he's not willing to put in that effort, he's going to feel the pressure of your foot on his ass when you kick him the fuck out the door. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. And they make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone, even people like me who were never home cooks, not until Blue Apron came along. And Blue Apron achieves this, turning people like me into cooks by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-proportioned ingredients so you can make delicious home-cooked meals in your own kitchen. Choose from a variety of new recipes each week or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you will never get bored, and you can customize your recipes each week based on your preferences. And all along the way, you are going to learn and develop kitchen skills thanks to Blue Apron's step-by-step instructions. Skills you can apply to other meals and improvising meals. When you're on your own and you don't have a Blue Apron, you will find yourself relying on the talents and skills that Blue Apron helped you to develop. That's what I have been doing. Blue Apron has several delivery options, so you can choose what fits your needs, and there is no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Here are a couple of items on the menu coming up. Spicy beef curry with crispy mung beans, and penne pasta and delicata squash with kale and ricotta cheese. That second item, of course, is vegetarian, and Terry and I are eating a lot more vegetarian food these days, thanks to Blue Apron and their delicious vegetarian options. Check out this week's menu and get $30 off your first meal with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/savage. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So do not wait. Support the Lovecast by going to blueapron.com/savage. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Actually, the only way I have ever cooked. We're going to take a quick break from the calls so we can have a chat with Angela Robinson, director of the new feature film Professor Marston and the Wonder Women. Hey, Angela, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Really well. And you've worked a lot in television, How to Get Away with Murder, True Blood, Hung, The L Word. This is your first feature film, isn't it?
No, actually, this is my third feature film.
Oh, my God.
Film.
I'm so
actually,
sorry.
I made two feature films kind of early in my career. I made a film called Debs, and I made another film, Herbie film for Disney. And then I went and I did a ton of television.
Well, this is your return to feature films. Then. So, congratulations on you.
Exactly.
Well, it's shaping up to be a triumphant return. Wonder Woman is having a big cultural moment. There's books, documentaries, now a feature film, your biopic about her creator, but it's really more accurate to say her creators. Your film is titled Wonder Women, plural, for a reason. Isn't that right?
Yes. Yes, definitely. Definitely. The film is about the extraordinary man who created Wonder Woman, but it's also about the two women in his life who inspired her creation.
And a lot of people aren't familiar with this backstory.
Right. Yes. No, it's been kind of hidden from history for a long time. They are his wife, was this woman named Elizabeth Holloway Marston, who was this incredible woman. She had 3 degrees and was an attorney and a psychologist along with her husband. And they taught at Marston. So she was very influential in his life. And also the both of them basically were psychologists teaching at Radcliffe in the late 20s, and they fell in love kind of collectively with one of their students, a woman named Olive Byrne. And together they did a lot of work creating the lie detector test, and they lived together and had a family together with kids for many years. And all of that went into the creation of the Wonder Woman comic.
How so? How did they plow that in? Their polyamorous relationship, how did that factor in to the creation of Wonder Woman?
Well, Marston had this really interesting, he was a psychologist. And so he wrote a lot of books. One was called The Emotions of Normal People, which I think is just an incredible title. And he had a psychological theory on human behavior, which he called DISC theory. And it stood for dominance, inducement, submission, and compliance. And his theory was basically that he did all these kind of tests on his students and all sorts of people and fraternities and sororities. And he basically decided that men were inherently anarchistic and violent, and women were inherently loving and nurturing. So he thought the path to peace on the planet was to have women rule the world, basically. but he just thought that that was just like a better idea and that would bring peace to the planet. But he thought men wouldn't give up their power voluntarily. And so he got this great idea, which was basically if women could kind of learn to use what he called captivation emotion or their kind of sexual allure to dominate men in a way that was pleasurable to men, then men would kind of give up their power voluntarily, and then women could be in charge and the world would be a better place.
So William Moulton Marston wasn't just in a polyamorous relationship. Was he in a dom sub relationship? Was he a pioneer in so many ways? Like so many things we talk about now constantly on this program and everybody else who's working in the sex and relationship field, you know, open relationships, polyamorous relationships, folding kink into your relationship. Was he just, although he did, of course, endorse a kind of gender essentialism I think a lot of people would reject now, and fucked a student, which would get you in trouble on most college campuses. Now, I'm sure Radcliffe now has rules against professors fucking students. But was he ahead of his time?
Yes. He was so ahead of his time. I think he's still ahead of his time. I hesitate to discuss the Marstons and Olive Byrne kind of in the language that we have today to describe what they were doing, because I don't think they thought about it like that. You know what I mean? I feel like, and in the movie, I tried to tell what I think is a really organic love story, just about three people falling in love and starting to explore these themes within their relationship.
And they didn't have a sort of off-the-shelf framework to help them understand what they were doing. They were really doing something radical.
Right, exactly. I think that, do you know what I mean? I don't like all this, these words and kind of definitions and identities and stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't think were part of their, how they conceived of themselves. So I think from kind of a modern framework, you can look at their story and apply all these things to them, but that's not what my task as a filmmaker was to do. My task was just to kind of say what would happen if these three people fell in love, and then an exploration of Marston's ideas and philosophies. And he had this notion that the best form of happiness was what he called submission to a loving authority. And I think that was literal and also metaphorical, where he thought, like, if a student loves a great teacher, do you know what I mean? And that teacher's loving, then, or a general and a soldier, or, you know, he applied it to government, to all sorts of things. And I read this book, which is kind of helpful to me, called The Sadomasochism of Everyday Life, which was just about how in the film, the kind of exploration of BDSM is literal, but also figurative, in that I think his point is that these kind of power dynamics play out all over the place between the police and perpetrators, or between, do you know what I mean, that these in with your boss,
right,
and an employee, that these kind of systems of power exchange and dominance and submission are in every aspect of our life. He was really against what he called compliance, basically. He's like, if people are forced to do what they don't want to do, they're merely complying, and that leads to resentment. He was like, you have to induce people. You basically have to seduce people into your way of thinking, and that's the only way that people have to want to do it.
I don't want to psychoanalyze him, but it does seem to me that, you know, just in hearing about his book, the emotional lives of normal people, or whatever that title was, and his theories of dominance, submission, and compliance, and inducing it and seducing it, it does seem to me that you had someone here who was into BDSM, into kink, aroused by dominance and submission, trying to project onto the whole world his kink, or telling the whole world that everyone would embrace my particular sort of arousal pattern, everyone would be much happier, when actually what was going on is he was happy when he got to indulge in this kind of kink, and he just kind of assumed that everybody else would be equally as happy. Was he trying to universalize the shit that made his dick hard?
The film really explores that. At one point, I guess I'm allowed to swear on this program.
Yes, you are.
At one point, his wife asked him, like, when are you going to stop justifying the whims of your cock with science, basically? You know what I mean? Like, the movie really explores this kind of contradiction between, like, Marston's full of contradiction.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the first line of Emotions of Normal People is, are you normal? And the rest of the book is a huge defense of why he is normal and why his ideas are right and this is the right way to be. And the film really kind of takes him to task and investigates a lot of, it tells the kind of love story, but it also, there's a lot of strong female characters bringing him to really have to defend his notions about feminism and sexuality and bondage and whether it is self-serving, you know, exactly like how you just described it, or whether it is, you know, really trying to save the world with his ideas. And I personally think it's kind of a combination of both. I think he's a fascinating guy.
It's rare for there to be a film where the kinkster, or kinksters, I guess, but the kinkster is the hero or the protagonist. Kink is usually a stand-in for something destructive, as opposed to a creative force that led to, you know, the creation of this enduring icon, Wonder Woman. And I really enjoyed the film, and I really enjoyed seeing the kinkster as a force of good, or a force of creation, as opposed to the kink being a stand-in for sinister or destructive or damaged, which is usually the case.
It was really important for me not to otherize their experience, or it's always portrayed as this, like, you know, crazy, kinky, dark, you know, on film.
Right, without joy, without connection, without intimacy. It's this sleazy, dark, intense.
Right. And that was, I actually put this whole missive out to all the departments. I said, this is not, we're not doing that in this film. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, there's a dialectic in the movie between fantasy and reality. And that's what they're struggling with. And fantasy being Wonder Woman, and being Paradise Island, and being this kind of utopia where you could be who you want to be. So in the sequences that where they're exploring their sexuality and their sexual dynamic together, I really wanted those to be full of joy and fantasy and creation. Because to me, I remember talking to Sony Stage 6, financed the film, and I said, to me, the lie detector sequences are about sex, and the sex scenes are about freedom. And about the freedom to, like, discover your truest self with these partners and what they could kind of create together, which ultimately became Wonder Woman.
Okay, one last question. I have to admit, and maybe this is a boast in the drag of an admission, but I am immune to the charms of superhero movies and the Marvel Universe and that other universe, whatever the fuck it's called. And so I'm afraid that some people like me who just don't go see Thor movies and what's-his-face covered in metal, whatever that movie is. I don't see these movies. I could give a shit.
Iron Man,
yeah. That's it. Yeah. I could give a shit about these movies. And I'm afraid that some people like me may hear, oh, there's another Wonder Woman movie out there? Not for me. This movie is for people who may not be into the superhero movie genre.
Actually, what's been really remarkable is, I went into thinking that, because of some of the topics that maybe, is America ready for this movie? But it's been really embraced across a wide spectrum of people. Do you know what I mean? And a kind of, with art house audiences and comic book people and superhero people. And I actually feel like the message is basically of a love story and how this love story is the true origin for Wonder Woman. And people have really kind of come together around that message, which has been really cool and gratifying so far.
Angela Robinson is the director. Professor Marston and the Wonder Women is the film, opened to really great reviews at the Toronto International Film Festival, and opens in theaters October, I think, 13th. Is that right?
That is correct.
All right, you will want to go see this movie if you are interested in these themes that we are constantly addressing, or these issues that are constantly coming up on the Lovecast: BDSM, polyamory, bisexuality, unicorns, how to find them. All of that is a part of this movie and so much more. Thank you, Angela, for jumping on the phone with us today. We really appreciate it. And I recommend this film, and I think everybody should see it. I really enjoyed it.
Great. Thank you so much.
Hi, Dan. I am a 27-year-old straight male calling from Europe. I am in a pretty happy long-term relationship. My girlfriend and I have been living together for 3 years now. So my girlfriend is using an app to track her period, in which she inputs when she has the period, how heavy it is every day, but also moods, including sexual desire. This app then predicts what she can expect in terms of her period, but also pretty accurately predicts her sexual desire. So recently she asked me to install this app as well so that she can share her data with me. I can then see myself when to expect a period, which is okay with me, and it's actually good. But also what she would like is that I can see how much she's up for sex every day. What she says is that, well, although we have good sexual life in general, she says that she wishes that I was better at reading her mood sometimes. So it happens that she's very much up for sex. I can be tired. I can have something else in my mind, or I may just not feel like it. And she's unhappy about those instances. Myself, I'm not sure whether it's really me failing to read her mood, or rather I can read her mood and I know what she wants, but I just don't want to meet her expectations because I don't feel like it. What she would like for me with this app is, for example, come home from work and I can already see how much she'll be up for sex and I can prepare for it. Basically, yeah, I myself am not sure about it. First of all, I'm wondering whether it's actually fair to expect your partner to always be prepared to have sex with you. Second, I'm worried that by having this information about what exactly her mood is, I'm going to kind of lose interest in initiating sex myself. I don't mind if I know what her desire is as well, but I also like spontaneous sex, and I'm not sure I would like it if I always knew whether she is up for sex or not. I think I do. I like initiating sex in a way that I start something and I try to see how she reacts, and I continue in one or another way. So basically, I'm worried that I will lose her interest if I always know what she is up to, or how much she wants sex.
I can understand why this squicks you out or unnerves you or turns you off. I wouldn't want to be ordered around by an app. I would feel pressured. I would feel performance anxiety. I would feel obligated to come through with the D at perhaps times when I wasn't feeling it because, oh my God, the app says must fuck tonight. But I'm a little concerned when you say that you want sex to be spontaneous, that you want to initiate and see if you can't draw her out, and that'll be less rewarding for you somehow if you know that she's horny, because there are guys out there, and I'm not saying that you're one of them. I just detect a couple of sort of little tiny, not red, maybe pink or violet flags. There are guys out there who want girlfriends who have no desire, who don't get horny, that they make horny, that you know, they seduce them, that they instill desire. Desire isn't present. The girl is pure and without animalistic urges like the dude, but the dude can, through his dudely, sexy, wily ways, turn this block of stone into a panting orgasm machine. And that's all his magic dick power, right? And I don't want to encourage that if that's who you are, because that's fucked up. Women have agency. Women have desire. Women get horny. It sounds like she may be invested in being that kind of block of marble. If she can't tell you when she's horny, and so there are times when she's super horny, but she doesn't let it show and won't say, won't use her words, and she's frustrated at the ends of those evenings when you are incapable of doing what all people are incapable of doing for their partners, reading her mind. And she wants to outsource the telling that she is horny to this app. That's a little fucked up too. So I think both of you need to use your words and have a conversation about what it is she's trying to do with this app, why she wants to use the app to tell you what she herself can tell you anytime. I'm up for sex right now. I'm super fucking horny. She can even initiate. And if it's a turnoff for you when she initiates, and that's part of what is turning you off here, not just that she's using an app to order you around, but she's using an app to initiate. And you don't want her to initiate because you think that's what the male does in the relationship. It's the man who initiates and the woman who succumbs. Well, that's fucked up and that's sexist. And if I were her, that would be a huge turnoff to me. So the app, I think, is a symptom of a disease that may go deeper in your relationship and in both of your psyches and both of your attitudes toward sex and gender roles and who does what in a sexual relationship based on who is male and female. And I think that's what you should have a conversation with your girlfriend about. Now, I'm sure there are some guys out there who would get off on being ordered around by an app. You aren't one of them.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling about the woman in episode 571 who is worried about her boyfriend living in his car. I think she really has to look at the boyfriend. I am a 32-year-old professional who has spent the last year living in a garden shed in order to get my house built. This may be her boyfriend's opportunity to make his music career work, or it may be an opportunity to play Peter Pan. She's got to take a hard look at him and decide.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling about the woman on episode 571 who's going to a bondage B&B with her husband. I recommend that she go to YouTube and find a video on tying a basic chest harness. It's very easy to learn, almost no risk of injury. Every woman who experiences it comments on how sensual it feels, and it would be a good way for that couple to do something kind of fun at the B&B.
Hey, Savage Lovecasters. This is a call in response to episode 571 and the trans dude who wondered when to disclose on hookup apps like Grindr or Scruff. And I say to disclose right away, either in the selections that they give you. I know that Scruff has a transgender option. And if it's not in the option, then go ahead and put it in your profile. And of course, it helps to weed out transphobes, assholes, people who aren't compatible. But it also, I think that what we forgot to also mention in its full variety is that it gives men like me who are totally into trans dudes, not in a creepy fetishistic way, but in a variety of certainly the spice of life. Men of all origins have great bodies, great stories to tell, and are fun when you take their pants off. So don't hide from us, man. We want to find you and put a big smile on your face.
And we're going to leave it there. Quick note, my shows with Esther Perel are this week, Thursday, at the Egyptian Theater in Seattle. Unfortunately, that event is sold out, so your only chance to see me and Esther talk about her new book, State of Affairs, is this Friday, October 13th, at the Orpheum Theater in Vancouver, British Columbia. Esther will be answering your questions with me live and signing copies of her new book after the show. Go to www.savagelovecast.com for more info and to order tickets. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Angela Robinson on Twitter at @RobinsonAngela. And follow Mistress Matisse on Twitter, which you should probably be doing already because I've told you to follow her so many times. Follow Mistress Matisse on Twitter at Mistress Matisse. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with another installment of Savage Lovecast. Thanks for coming.